Thank you, Mary, and thank you, Matthew. And know that our thoughts and prayers go with you as you head back to New York for your next show. Well, this is the final week in our series looking at some of the questions people ask most frequently about our faith. In fact, this was not one of my original sermons in the plan. This one is a sermon by popular demand. You may not have known you could do that, but it is possible. And I was asked by quite a few of you to address this question, and so here we go. I mean, I'm a little disappointed because I thought the popular demand question would be, "Dear God, why is our pastor so amazing?" But that apparently wasn't the question on your mind. It was this miracles thing. And I actually have collected quite a few miracle stories over the years, and I also sent out an email to the people who had taken the spiritual gifts class earlier this year to see if they had any stories. I checked with people on Facebook as well, and I received so many stories, I could give at least three sermons on them. And so it seems pretty clear just from that kind of response that miracles are happening all around us. God didn't quit after creation, didn't even take a vacation after Jesus. Our text today comes from the book of Acts, and that's, you know, the story of how the early church expanded and spread out from Jerusalem out to the whole world after Jesus' death and resurrection. Now, right before this text, James, the brother of John, one of the three disciples Jesus brought up to the Mount of Transfiguration, one of Jesus' closest friends, James is in prison. And Herod Agrippa puts James to death by the sword. James died. He wasn't saved. It wasn't a dream. He really died. He didn't get resurrected like Lazarus. He really died. And Herod Agrippa sees how this murder results in increased popularity with his Jewish subjects, and so he kind of puts out a dragnet to capture more Christians, and Peter himself gets swept up. Have you ever been to a sporting event when someone gets injured? I'm not talking like World Cup flopping injured. I'm talking actually injured. If someone is on the team, but they're not that important, you know, people will generally have a respectful silence and then maybe a golf clap whenever the person gets up. But if the injured person is a superstar, all the air gets sucked out of the stadium like a shop vac. People hold their breath. Some cry, seeing their hero down and probably realizing they might lose. Peter, James, and John, they were like the superstars of Jesus' disciples. And now James is dead. Peter is in prison, about to be executed. The air is sucked out of the church. They're wondering, is this faith real? Has it all just been a giant coincidence up till now? Will God really allow the superstars to be martyred for the faith? James is already gone. What will happen to Peter? Acts chapter 12. While Peter was kept in prison, the church prayed fervently to God for him. The very night before Herod was going to bring him out, Peter, bound with two chains, was sleeping between two soldiers, while guards in front of the door were keeping watch over the prison. In other words, no chance of escape. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared, and a light shone in the cell. He tapped Peter on the side and woke him, saying, "Get up quickly." The chains fell off of his wrists. The angel said to him, "Fasten your belt, put on your sandals," and so he did so. Then he said to him, "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me." And Peter went out and followed him. He did not realize that what was happening with the angel was real. He thought he was seeing a vision. After they had passed the first and the second guard, they came before the iron gate leading into the city. It opened for them of its own accord, and they went outside and walked along a lane when suddenly the angel left him. Then Peter came to himself and said, "Now I am sure that the Lord has sent his angel and rescued me from the hands of Herod and from all that the Jewish people were expecting." And as soon as he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose other name was Mark, where many had gathered and were praying, and he knocked at the outer gate. A maid named Rhoda came to answer. On recognizing Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed that instead of opening the gate, she ran in and announced that Peter was standing at the gate. But they said to her, "You're out of your mind." But she insisted that it was so, and they said, it's his angel." Strangely enough, that wasn't worth going to see. But meanwhile, Peter continued knocking. When they opened the gate, they saw him and were amazed. He motioned to them with his hand to be silent, and he described for them how the Lord had brought him out of the prison. And he added, "Tell this to James, the brother of Jesus, and to the believers." Then he left and went to another place. When morning came, there was no small commotion among the soldiers over what had become of Peter. And when Herod had searched for him and could not find him, he examined the guards and ordered them to be put to death. Then he went down from Judea to Caesarea and stayed there. This is the word of the Lord. So thanks be to God. Well, I mentioned that I asked people in our church and people I know from the past on Facebook for their miraculous stories, and I already told you that I received a ton of them, but the most fascinating thing to me about that, I mean, each story is pretty incredible, but that's not the most fascinating thing to me. Given how many stories I received from people I know, people who have had spiritual conversations with me, some many times, it is fascinating that I did not know a single one of these stories yet. The people in my life have experienced tangible, powerful presence of the living God, and I didn't know about it. Isn't that fascinating? Doesn't that seem a little strange? I mean, someone in your pew today could have experienced a Bible-worthy miracle, and maybe you've talked to them about your kids and grandkids, and you've talked about your work and probably about the weather, but I bet you don't know about that miracle. Why is that? My theory is that we, as intellectual Presbyterians, being decent and in order at all times, are afraid that we will be ridiculed if we tell our story. We are afraid that an investigator will jump out and unmask our story like the end of a Scooby-Doo episode, and I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for you kids. But that's why I asked the spiritual gift class attendees. We learned in that class how to think about, how to categorize and explore our extraordinary experiences, and now some of those people are a little more comfortable sharing what they might not have shared even last year. In our first text today, Jesus does his very first miracle, turning water into wine for a wedding party, and how many of the guests know about it? Zero. How about the bride and the groom? This is their party. Nope. But surely the bride's mother knew. I mean, they know everything, right? Not this time. Only Jesus, his mother, and the servants knew about it. Everyone else was blissfully unaware that they were drinking miracle wine of a very, very recent vintage. And so I wonder how many extraordinary stories we are missing because of that fear of sharing. I mean, sometimes others might say, that's not a miracle. They might tell us that. But in my experience, almost everyone is interested to hear. And so we miss out on a ton of those stories. But we also, I think, dismiss those stories. As you know, it is one of my missions in life, I think my highest calling, really, to find humor in the Bible. And our text today has a little bit of humor, if you were paying attention. Peter is miraculously freed from prison. Herod Agrippa's deadly wrath is thwarted. He makes his way back to the house where the church is praying, knocks on the door, calls out, and hears the maid Rhoda. She recognizes his voice and screams with delight. And so I kind of imagine, Peter's like got the big smile on his face, ready to give Rhoda a hug. Still waiting. He hears her voice seem to get further and further and further into the house. Confused, he knocks again, but no Rhoda. Knocks again, no Rhoda. Knocks again, finally, his fellow believers come out to greet him. I mean, come on, that scene is funny, right? The only thing that's missing is like Kramer appearing to be a part of the action. As a side note, do you think they made that up? I mean, that's the kind of quirk that is stranger than fiction. That had to be a real story. Or we need to give out some creative writing awards posthumously. But I wonder how many times do we do what those disciples did inside the house, dismissing the miracle standing right in front of us? How many times do we chalk it up to coincidence or good fortune or karma or something else, anything else but God? Isn't it also surprising that the early church, these followers of Jesus who had seen a lot of things, would so easily dismiss that this miracle could have happened? Well, now we get to get into one of Cody's theories that are more what my preaching professor would call sanctified imagination. I cannot guarantee this. My theory is that the miracles in the Bible still seemed miraculous at the time. My theory is that miracles still weren't like some, you know, wizard casting healing spells on demand. My theory is that the early church did not get everything they wanted when they wanted it every time. Case in point, James wasn't saved. He died at the hands of Herod Agrippa. But let's think about this. I mean, I think it's kind of a normal inclination to believe that it seems like maybe God did a lot more miracles back in biblical times. Right? I think that's a pretty common thing we might think. But let's go with that for a minute. How much more frequent were miracles back then? You know, was it like twice as common, three times as common, maybe 10 times as common back in biblical times as today? Well, at the time that this was written, there were about like 200 to 300 million people total in the world. Less than 10,000 of them were Christians. Now there are 7.6 billion people and 2.4 billion Christians. And so miracles could be 100 times less frequent today than they were in biblical times, and there would still be way, way, way more miracles today than back then. We can't control them, though. We can't command them. We can't conjure them like a spell. For example, Dalia Knox is a gospel singer who was in a violent car wreck early in her life. Her siblings walked away pretty much unharmed, but she would not walk again. She forged ahead with her life. She continued to sing God's praises as a gospel singer. She found her husband along the way after the accident. And as a gospel singer, she ran in a little more Pentecostally circles than we normally frequent, and she says that she grew to hate healing services. Because inevitably, someone would see her in her wheelchair and come over to her and try to lift her out of her wheelchair to heal her. And she said, and I quote, "I've been plopped, dropped, flipped, everything but healed." And so after 22 years of this, she and her husband were at a revival, and it suddenly turned into a healing service. And she said, if I'd have known that, I never would have gone. But something was different this time. She reports that God was telling her to stop complaining about the healing service, to stop fighting to control her life, and to just worship Him. And she also realized she could feel something in her legs. As God's voice kept sounding in her head, "Just worship me, just worship me, just worship me," suddenly, for the first time in 22 years, she stood out of her wheelchair. Now, her legs didn't know what to do, so she had to sit back down. But after a couple of minutes, she stood again, started willing her hips to move, moving her knees in a very awkward gait. There's actually a video of this. I've seen it. It is not graceful, but it is beautiful. As she walks around the stage for the first time in 22 years. Now she walks normally, still sings God's praises as a gospel singer, and dances with her husband every chance she gets. Now, I love that story, not just because it's a miracle. I love the story because people had tried to force it to become a miracle for 22 years, and they couldn't. She was plopped, dropped, and flipped instead. In other words, we don't get to just, you know, oh, I now have a level 3 healing spell and you shall be healed. We don't get to do that. We don't get to control God. But sometimes these things do happen. But I guess that does beg the question, what is a miracle? Right? I like the simplicity of one of our members' definitions she sent in. A miracle is a situation where you go, whoa, and realize God is in charge. That's pretty good. But here's another way to think about what miracles really are. Go ahead and grab your bulletin or another piece of paper, it's fine. If you're feeling really bold, you could, you know, I have like the hymnal if you want to show your strength. Hold it out in front of you. Why is it not falling? Has the law of gravity suddenly stopped? Well, no, you're able to overcome the force of gravity with your own force, right? You can put it down now if you want. And now you could also drop them to make sure gravity is still working if you want to know. You can overcome the force of gravity up to a point. If you were one of the strongest people in history, you could overcome about 6,000 pounds of gravity on your back. That's about two cars for reference. That's like the world record. But that's where humans top out. That's where our capability ends. But what is God's max bench press? Or that's like the age-old question. You've probably heard it. Can God make a weight so heavy even he can't lift it? And the answer is, I don't know, but God can sure make people sassy enough to ask that question. So here's my point, though. God is stronger than the physical forces that he created. Just as we can overcome gravity with a stronger force in some circumstances, God can overcome the physical forces of this world with his greater force. It's not that the physical forces stopped working. It's just that they were overcome by a greater force. And this happens all around us all the time. That's also why the definition of miracle changes over time. It's only a miracle if we can't replicate or explain it. It has to exceed human understanding and ability. And that's when people of faith can see that it is not a coincidence. It is God. In 2010, Kate Ogg gave birth to twins after only 27 weeks. That's dangerous if you don't know. Jamie and Emily were their names. Emily survived, but Jamie couldn't breathe. And after 20 minutes of resuscitation attempts, the doctors had to admit that the little boy had died. The nurses brought Jamie's lifeless body to his mother's chest so that the family could say their goodbyes. About 5 minutes later, though, Jamie began moving. And so they called the doctor, who said over the phone, well, those movements are reflexes, not real life. A couple hours later, still cuddling with their medically dead child, Jamie opened his eyes. They called the doctor again, who over the phone, once more, said, still reflexes, not life. Then they started noticing the steadily rising and falling movement of their child's breathing, and they decided there was only one way to get this doctor in the room. They lied to him and said, we are now ready to accept our child's death. Please come. The doctor came in, had to pick his jaw up off the floor, brought out his stethoscope, and confirmed what the parents already knew, muttering, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Jamie is still alive today. No health complications. That is beyond human ability, beyond human understanding, but not beyond God. Other times, miracles are a partnership between God and us. For example, Christine Joy was born in the Philippines, and she suffered debilitating seizures from birth. She would stop breathing. Her face would grow dark. Even her fingernails would turn black from lack of oxygen. But somehow, miraculously, she survived. And after several months of that, she was, you know, that miraculous survival, but still terrifying illness, she happened to be in a town where Compassion International came through. And the Compassion doctors found a medication that worked for her and got rid of her seizures. They found a sponsor who was willing to pay for the medication ongoing. And now when she sees the nurse, she says, when I get grown, prepare yourself. I'll become a doctor and I'll inject you. That's a partnership between us and God. Sometimes miracles are something small. They don't have to be this life or death thing. One of our church members recounted, you know, losing his wallet somewhere during a day of hiking and kayaking. And they rewalked the trails, but no luck. Kind of hard to recheck the lake. But after checking everywhere and even lobbing up a few prayers to the patron saint of lost things for the former Catholics in our midst, they gave up on the search, only to receive a phone call from the police that someone had found it. How it was spotted, no one knows. And that person turned it into the police with everything still intact. Coincidence or small act of grace from God? You decide. Sometimes miracles are something avoided. I have learned to listen to the Holy Spirit while driving. The road from our house to the my previous church in Bethlehem, went up this steep east-facing hill. It's basically a blind left turn if you hit it at the wrong time with the sun in your eyes. And I was alone in the car about to turn on one of those days when I heard an almost audible stop. So I hit the brakes, and about a second later, a car whizzed by that I had never seen. Another time in Bethlehem, I was nearing our house, coming over a little hill, Charlie in the back passenger seat, and suddenly I just knew I needed to dodge into the other lane. And I started dodging just before the woman who was at the stop sign, who did not see us, plowed into us. And the difference on my dodge was the difference between an inconvenient hit on our wheel well and a potentially fatal hit directly on Charlie's door. Here in Littleton, I was driving back from an event also with Charlie. Charlie's apparently either good luck or bad luck. And I had a protected left turn behind a very large tow truck. And I once again felt an almost audible get in the other lane. So I quickly started turning to get into the other lane, just as a car that was turning right on red and didn't see me started pulling out. And we missed by about the width of a flea. And so either I have some kind of precognition going on, in which case, would you like to join me for a high-stakes game of poker, or God's been doing some backseat driving. Sometimes the miracle is more spiritual than physical. God had a very interesting way of reaching one of our members. She had a pretty colorful past, became a single mom at an early age, enjoyed a certain recreational drug that is only legal in a few states, but was not legal at the time. And an unmarked white van was parked in front of her house for a while, and the police came to knock and see if she knew anything about it. And she didn't, and told them she didn't know what it was, no big deal. But she saw that her son was so frightened of the police, and she realized he was afraid that they were going to come arrest his mom. She realized she needed a different life. A few weeks later, somehow her name got into the hands of the Billy Graham crusade coming through town. She got a phone call to get connected. And so an unmarked white van, a friendly encounter with the neighborhood police, a terrified child, and a Billy Graham crusade led her to the Lord. Miraculous timing to put all that together. Sometimes the miracle is relational. One of my brothers-in-law told me his miracle story. He has had a very long, troubled relationship with his dad. Lived very close to their Catholic church that had a well-known kind of prayer shrine area. But in all the years that they'd lived there, he had never been to it. But one night after fighting with his dad, he decided just on a whim, maybe I should go to that little prayer shrine and walk around. And there was one other person there, a woman who was there praying, who desperately wanted to tell someone her story. And so my brother-in-law was the only one there, so he got to hear her whole story. Through tears, she told him how she was abused by her father, how she fell into a pretty rough life, how she was desperate to get out of it. And that encounter made something click inside of him. He realized that his relationship with his father was difficult, but it could be so much worse. And he started to notice the reasons he had to be grateful, not just resentful. And that has stayed with him to this day. Strange timing of events or miraculous orchestration? You decide. Sisters and brothers, miracles happen all the time. Things happen that are beyond human ability and human understanding. Miraculous healings, miraculous births, miraculous partnership between us and God, miraculously avoiding something, a miraculous spiritual connection, miraculous change in relationships. Miracles are all over, but we often miss them or dismiss them. I believe that God is far more powerful than any physical force in this universe that God created, able to do anything. Sometimes God doesn't act. James, one of those superstars of the early church, died. But Peter was saved, miraculously. I have collected enough stories to give several sermons, but I promise I'll keep it to just this one. But how can you have eyes to see, ears to hear, the heart to feel, and maybe even the voice to speak what God is doing beyond your ability, beyond your understanding. Because it's not beyond God.